Hello, everyone, and welcome to another instalment of our favourite colour and decorating podcast, Let's Colour. I'm Marianne Shillingford.
And I'm Steph King. And thank you so much for joining us again for the last episode in the current series, which is sad times. So before we get all smushy and say our goodbyes for this series, let's focus on giving you a jam-packed show rammed full of colourful insights into all things DIY.
So to start us off today, in our colour lookbook segment, we'll be discussing a certain colour that's the embodiment of happiness, positivity and hope, and is also widely associated with creativity, but lots more about that later on.
Absolutely, and sticking with our happy, positive theme, we'll then be talking to literally one of my favourite people on Instagram right now, the jolliest person on the planet, as well as an amazing furniture and textile designer, Zoe Murphy. Then, on to one of my favourite parts of the entire show, we'll check into the Dr. Dulux surgery and prescribe some antidotes to your decorating dilemmas.
And of course, to finish up our very last episode in the series, we'll leave you with a fantastic feel-good colour story, proving just how much a pop of colour here and there can really brighten up your day. And this one is properly life-affirming, so stay tuned.
What a show! We really have to get on with it, don't we, Marianne? So, how are you?
I'm all right.
You are always up to some kind of mischief. So, why don't you start and tell me what you've been up to and what's been catching your attention this week?
Well, this is something that involves you, Steph, because the thing that has been on my mind for weeks and weeks and weeks and has been so exciting, but we've not been able to talk about, is the return of Changing Rooms.
Oh, I'm so excited.
And so excitingly, so it's been incredible because Dulux is sponsoring Changing Rooms. And honestly, when we got the news, we were all squealing in the office because Changing Rooms was that iconic decorating program in the 90s that I have to say, it got me into this business. It was the thing that kind of made sense of everything. It made theatre of decorating. It was all about colour. It was all about decorating as craft. And oh, I just loved it. And I know you loved it too, Steph. I know you loved it too.
Absolutely loved it. It's, and much like you, whilst I didn't begin my career at 14 or whenever it was that I watched it, it was absolutely the catalyst for what I wanted to do as a career. I just had this vision of wanting suddenly to be an interior designer, and that was my reference point for what an interior designer did, which, you know, is probably quite offensive to interior designers out there. I apologize, because it's much more, you know, different to what you see on TV. But yeah, I absolutely loved that show, and I remember watching it and wanting to just get into interiors and that kind of design.
I know. And we met, and actually Lawrence and the team came into Dulux HQ a couple of weeks ago, and we spent a whole day with them, immersing them in all of our color history and all of our colour palettes, and we had so much fun. We actually got them all painting, and it was so exciting. And Lawrence didn't disappoint, did he?
Absolutely.
I mean, I wasn't going to say this, but I had a bit of a dream about him the night before, so it was hard to look him in the eye. And he was wearing an amazing suit, some big Cuban heels, very much taller than I thought he would be. And that was quite something. But it was such great fun. It really was great fun. And it just kind of, it made me realise how important, what wonderful time it is to start this programme again. Yeah. When we've all been sitting inside looking at our homes and sort of thinking that they need something more on the walls. I mean, this is absolutely perfect timing to launch a show like Changing Rooms again.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. You know, we've all been locked up in our homes and staring at our four walls. And I think we're just ready to kind of embrace our homes again. And we've actually been talking as a team about, you know, of course, the catalyst of what Dulux and of course the Changing Room show, you know, was at that particular time. But then I also kind of remember this move towards, you know, the house doctor kind of coming in and wanting us suddenly to paint all of our lovely colourful rooms beige and magnolia and keep it neutral and just kind of what a sad time that was. And unfortunately, I think we've kind of carried a little bit of that with us since then. You know, it's all been about our homes as asset that we need to keep, maintain and,
yeah,
you know, kind of sell. But I'm really looking forward to kind of really energizing the nation again. So just love our homes and fill them with our, with personality.
I know. And the lovely thing as well is, I remember back in the day where everybody was given £500 to decorate, you know, do an entire room, change the sofa, change the carpets. And £500 went a long way when you were used a lot of paint. And so paint was the real hero, the huge transformer in the space. And that's when I remember as well, they used to have Dulux cans, you know, back in the day where nobody really sort of noticed this kind of stuff. So they had Dulux cans all over the floor.
Yeah.
And that's another association I had with this kind of amazing transformation, was kind of, Dulux was like the absolute heart of that. So, oh, I'm so excited about it. Anyway, I know it's been a busy few weeks for you as well. So what have you been up to, Steph? I mean, that's our big news, but what have you been doing?
We have been certainly very, very busy over the last few weeks indeed. But on that note though, what I've really been trying to do recently, as it has been really busy, is actually have a bit more focus on taking a bit more of a break. So a few weeks ago now, it was, of course, Mental Health Awareness Day. And mental health awareness and mental health in general is something I feel really passionately about. And it's really great to see businesses such as ours really taking that a bit more seriously, you know, giving people extra days off, or, you know, just even raising it as a problem, especially when we're all in our homes, you know, doing our jobs, living our lives, raising our children, schooling them, you know, obviously earlier in the year. It's really important, I think, just to kind of raise it and have a bit more focus on a work-life balance. So that's really what I've been trying to do. And I've really just been trying to think of ways not to do huge things, because then it feels like another job on that massive to-do list that we all have in life. But really just do small things here and there that can really make a difference to your self-care. So my challenge over October has been to make sure I take a lunch break, because it's really easy to get up in the morning, open the laptop or switch on the computer and just work constantly from 8 till, you know, whenever, especially because you're not going from an office where you can physically get up and leave and then come home. It's completely different working in your own home. So I've been taking a lunch break, which is small but has helped. But I tell you what, Marianne, I have also discovered on these lunch breaks Netflix, which is not new. I don't know if anyone's heard of Netflix before. I'm sure you all have. As have I. But I am a person that doesn't really like to sit still and likes to be productive at all times. And, you know, this has really forced me to find another love of life, which is now Netflix. So I have watched a lot of rubbish TV on Netflix, so I'm not going to recommend those shows to you, because we all know what those are. Selling Sunset is on that list. However, I have found some really great shows that I think you would be really interested in.
Oh, do tell.
So, are you ready for my show recommendations? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, I love a bit of crap TV, but I also really like a documentary. So one documentary I've stumbled upon, and I think everyone's talking about this, so again, I'm late to the party as ever, but a documentary called The Social Dilemma. Have you come across this yet, Marianne?
No, I haven't. No. I'm even later to the party than you.
Oh gosh, I wasn't sure that was possible, but it is. And I'll tell you about it. It is a show about, and I find it particularly interesting doing what I do. It's a show about social media, the rise of social media, kind of how it started out as, you know, these community platforms bringing people together. And I guess across the years that it's been a thing and more platforms have kind of come onto the market, how it's kind of changed, how it's merged into something that's potentially something that's dangerous for the future. And it's not just social media platforms either. There's lots of different kind of big businesses like Amazon and Google, you know, wrapped up in that too. It's a really fascinating documentary. And whether you, you know, like me, work in a kind of marketing field or just as a consumer of these sorts of channels, it's really fascinating to learn.
Oh, brilliant. We'll watch that.
About these algorithms that we all talk about. And really recommend it. It's a bit scary, but really good, and really good to be informed, I think, of these sorts of things. Yeah. So definitely recommend that one. Right, are you ready for my second one?
Yeah, next
bit,
one.
Bit more lighthearted, this one. The Home Edit. Have you heard of the Home Edit?
No, I've heard of it, Steph, but you know, honestly, I'm again late to the party with this one. Do tell.
Yeah. You know, we talked about the modern house last week, and that was that was like our interior design porn. Mm. So this is on that sort of level for me, but it's far less glamorous because it's about how to organize yourself and your things, which sounds really simple, but the Home Edit are basically this agency in America that set themselves up as a team that will come into your home and just like organize your stuff for you. And I just want a piece of that action. I just need it in my life. They have the most amazing little like trinkety containers that I didn't think I needed. They're like clear Perspex things that you put on your shelf that separate all of your handbags. I was like, oh my God, I want those now. They've got like a label machine. I want a label machine. They've got like boxes to put your shoes in that like stack really nice. I want those. I'm just obsessed.
When I'm doing something creative, I'm insanely messy. But I find that if I'm living in a mess, I can't think straight and I get quite stressed about, I like to put things in order. I know it's a sort of work displacement thing, but I like to get things in order. However, my niece came to stay. We went away for the week and she came to stay in our house and she Marie Kondo'd my smalls drawers. Oh, it was a bit strange coming back and having all your pants it was very strange. I wasn't sure whether I liked that quite so much, but I do get you about the whole organization thing, things being in the right box, knowing where to find them. It just makes life less stressful. I think that it's that unfinished business of stuff everywhere. I love that. So what's your third one?
My third one, I think you're really going to like this one. So this show is called The Abstract. And the subline of it is called The Art of Design. And it's a series, I think it's about 10 to 15 episodes, where it concentrates on a different kind of designer. So the episodes that I've watched have some really interesting characters on. But the first one in the series, I think, is the most interesting. And it concentrates on a guy called Olafur, and I'm going to say this wrong, Eliasson. And he is a very famous artist and kind of turned architect. He was first brought to my attention because I went to Reykjavik on a short break with my husband and he designed the Harper Concert Hall, which kind of rests on the banks of the sea. And it's just this amazing, beautiful building and it's all lit up at night and fabulous. But what he really particularly focuses in on is light and colour. And that's how he goes about producing some of his installations and some of his artworks and, of course, architecture. And he had this amazing experiment where he had this monochromatic light, which makes everything look yellow. But when you look at a specific colour on a wall, it's like you can't see the colour. So then he would turn off that light and turn on a normal light, like a white light. And then suddenly you could see the colour. And then he sort of like went through this process of like describing very deeply, as artists do, in a bit of an over-the-top manner about, what is colour and does colour really exist? And, it's just really, really interesting how these people's minds work. So that is a great series of documentaries about design, really, which I think you'll find really interesting.
I'm definitely tuning into that. Definitely. Yeah. Amazing stuff. It's very highbrow. I was watching The Trial of the Chicago 7 last night and I would definitely recommend that, though that is more than a lunch break, but definitely, definitely watch that.
Yeah, absolutely, Marianne. Definitely go and watch that. And just before we finish this and go into our very exciting colour lookbook session, I absolutely just want to mention as a side note that please don't think that what I'm saying is the answer to mental health is Netflix, because it absolutely is not. That's just a very small personal example of how I am trying to address the mental health balance and work-life balance in my life. But mental health and mental health awareness is very, very important. And as I mentioned, it's important to me. So what we have done is put many more links to resources in the show notes for anyone who is genuinely struggling during these times, because it is definitely a feat of resilience having to be had at the moment under the times that we're in. So absolutely. Go and do check out the show notes for more.
It's a great call, Steph. It's such an important thing to raise. And wonderful. So we should get started on the show, shouldn't we, really?
We should. Yes, let's absolutely do that, because we could just chat all day, as is usually the case. So, for those of you who are new to us, this is the part of the show where we take a good look at a particular colour in detail. And the colour we're going to discuss today is one that over the past few years, we've been a little bit less bothered about filling our homes with.
It's a colour that fills us with positivity, exudes joy and radiates energy, but it's also universally a colour that stops us in our tracks and warns us of danger.
Exactly that. And in fact, it grabs and holds our attention so much, it is the most fatiguing colour on the spectrum. And in fact, studies have shown that people are more likely to lose their tempers in rooms painted this colour, and babies tend to cry more in rooms painted this colour. So that is definitely one to remember for prospective parents out there.
This colour definitely has a dark side. It's often associated with cowardice, betrayal, egoism and insanity.
And in Japan, this colour represents courage and strength. However, in some areas of Mexico, brighter shades of this colour represent death and mourning. This colour really is one of the most polarising colours on the spectrum, isn't it?
It certainly is. Have you guessed the colour we're discussing today?
Of course, the colour is yellow. So what are your thoughts on yellow, Marianne? Are you a lover or a hater? It does just seem to be one of those colours that's a bit Marmite, isn't it?
I know that it's one of the colours that we see many, many, many shades of. I know we see more greens than anything else, but actually yellow sits into that green spectrum. And I like yellow, makes me happy. But do you know when it gets towards that more green, acidic, limey yellows? Those kind of what we would describe as kind of almost the ones that make your, they're bitey ones, that make your ears giggle, like you've just sucked a lemon, you know. Those kind of colours, I find those really difficult. Bright, saturated yellows make me cringe.
Yeah, they're very in your face, aren't they, I think, yellows. Mm. And whenever we think of yellows, we are probably really drawn to those very vibrant, very saturated, rich coloured yellows, or like those limey coloured yellows that you referenced. So I can understand why, you know, potentially struggle to use it in their homes, particularly as a wall colour.
Yeah, I remember when the kids were little and they took them to nursery and they just redecorated the nursery school and they'd used this really violent yellow and you could almost see the kids were acting as if they'd eaten too many E numbers, you know, and I just wanted to say, dial that down. It overstimulates. So I think whereas we associate it with young children and if you imagine sort of spring and little chicks, and we give it this sort of youthfulness and yet it can be super agitating if you don't use it carefully. Why do you think it's so polarizing, this color? Because I would say that possibly the warm hints of white and yellows and golds were really, really massive, like magnolia and you know, jasmine white and all the soft daffodil yellows were massive until we had this turnaround to warm LED, which kind of opened up the cooler ends of the spectrum. Mm. But up until that point, we had, I remember us expanding the choice of yellows and golds in our colour offering because that's the colour that everybody wanted in their homes. And yet now it's become one of those colours that we don't tend to use so much. Yellow is a really difficult one.
It is a really difficult one. And I think when you talk to people, genuinely, people seem to like yellow as a colour. I think the reason for that is, you know, it's one of those colours that we've talked about on previous podcasts that you find in nature. So it feels like this really like life-giving colour. It makes us happy. It radiates energy. All of those things that we just talked about, because it's the colour of sun. You know, it's the colour of warmth, you know, and we all want a bit more of that in our lives. It's the colour of the earth, you know, in some of those more earthy tones. And it does feel like a natural colour, but it also has, you know, all of this kind of harshness to it as well, doesn't it? And I think it's that element that people, you know, once they start putting it in big volumes on their wall, where they really start to have a bit of a problem with, don't they?
Yeah, I think it's one of, when it goes back to the, when it, in combination with black as stripes, it warns us that we're going to get stung. And I think that intense saturated yellow in any space, you've got to be really careful with it. It makes a great photo, but it doesn't make a great living environment. When you talk about earthy tones, one of the oldest colours on earth is ochre.
Yes.
You dig anywhere down deep enough and you will get a shade of ochre, which will be very specific to the area that you live in. And those ochre golden yellows, those beautiful ochre golds, are absolutely gorgeous. You sent me as well this fantastic sheet of information that people were searching for online, you know, which they were searching for in terms of yellow. And the biggest one is earthy tones of yellow. So these ochre golds.
Loads more people actually suddenly at you searching for yellow, and particularly the more earthy tones involved in yellow. So like your mustard colours, the ochres that you were talking about, and also kind of tones that have a bit more gold perhaps with them, because it's really tempting to think about yellow and think, you know, that crazy like banana yellow, and you know, no one would want to live with that in on all four walls. But we have to remember, much like all the other colours that we've talked about during the series, that there are so many facets to all of these different colours on the spectrum. So there's a huge increase in search volume around people searching for mustards and ochres.
I get this return to nature, this return to the familiar, the natural things. We surround ourselves with these beautiful warm tones of wood, these golden tones of wood. And I think it's there in which our kind of, it's almost going back into the cave in a sense. We're going back into our little caves. And I think this is where this love of yellow has kind of resurged in interiors at the moment. So, have you ever used yellow in your house, Steph?
I have used a bit of yellow, actually. I've never used it on all four walls. And I think that is because instinctively it feels like something that I couldn't live with. And I think that reinforces all the things that we've just said about yellow. But what I have done is I've used a strong yellow as an accent on some of my walls. So in my kitchen, I've got a, and I know I'm not usually a fan of grey, which I know is like an unpopular opinion, but I have got a grey kitchen. And in my like dining space, I did decide that it just needed something just to like lift it. And I chose a really limey yellow that's in our range called Sweet Citrus. And I did it in a just a kind of geometric kind of effect going from the floor up the wall slightly. And what it has done is just add a bit of energy to that particular space. And that part of the room is where we have dinner and where the kids have dinner and where we do all of our art projects and, you know, that kind of stuff. So it felt like it needed it to almost zone it into a space where we do have more lively conversations, or, you know, we are being stimulated by the food that we're eating. I definitely don't think I could live with it in, you know, an all four walls situation. It wouldn't be one for me, unless it was one of these that were a bit warmer and earthier, like we're suggesting.
This use of colour as a tool to get people to do things and to kind of to encourage a type of behaviour is great. And yellow does that like no other colour. It's a real call to action colour, and it does make things pop. I think it's an amazing colour to make things pop.
Yeah.
I've just noticed here as well, Steph, that you said that searches for yellows and mustard tones have gone up by 50% online since last year. So
they
that's
have.
A real thing. That
it's a huge
real thing.
And I think what we're seeing in those search trends as well, more and more people actually looking to use them in living spaces. So I've just, you know, my example, it's using a small amount of yellow to, you know, kind of almost stimulate a response, as you were saying, in a room like a kitchen. But actually, what the search volume is really telling us, that people are more interested in having it as a colour that they, you know, live with in a kind of living room or a bedroom. So we have very much seen yellow and searches for yellow, and particularly those earthy tones, on the increase in those spaces.
Yeah, we've got some great links in the show notes to show people what these earth tones look like and real amazing inspiration on how to use that in your home. Steph, what colours work with yellow? What are the great combos, the sort of classic combos? I'm thinking, actually, I'm going to kick this one off.
Yeah.
So a yellow and blue combo, that really lovely thing we used to see, the country living back in that. That's back in the 90s, isn't it? Changing room days. But that combination, I really love that. But you've got that ice cool of blue and then this amazing sort of acid of yellow. It's almost like an Ottolenghi recipe, you know, they're kind of like amazing visual flavours together. They clash, but they just work together so well if you're brave enough to do it.
Yeah, definitely. I really like yellow with blue, actually. So blues was one of those colour combinations, I think, especially with mustard, and also the blues almost that we talked about in the last episode of the podcast, where we were talking about the rise of navies and those inky indigo kind of shades. They would work amazingly with yellow and mustard if you're brave enough.
So lovely.
Yeah. And also teal.
Oh, teal.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, just to edge slightly out of blue and more into kind of greeny blues, it would look amazing with teal, wouldn't it?
Oh, the sea and the sand.
Yes, maybe that's what it is. Yeah. Maybe that's what it is.
So what about neutrals? What are the best neutrals to team with yellow? You mentioned that you'd use yellow and grey together. That's that kind of cool and hot, you know, hot and sour or combo. What about other neutrals that you can use with yellow?
Yeah, I think grey and mustard has been one of those combinations of colours that have been around actually for many years. And especially since grey has been on the scene, I think we've been looking for colours that just jazz it up a little bit. And I definitely think mustard and yellow and, you know, ochres and golden tones are one of those colours that makes grey just look amazing. But I don't think we can forget about those warmer neutrals either. And I know in Brave Ground world, of course, thinking about colour futures and Brave Ground being our colour of the year, that looks great with yellow.
It does, actually. It does look amazing. Absolutely amazing. In the time palette, it looks absolutely amazing. Well, so we've learned a lot about yellow, Steph.
I have learned a lot about yellow.
I know. I might get the yellow paint out.
Well, we've inspired you. We've inspired you to do a little bit of yellow somewhere.
I'm going to paint the inside of a wardrobe yellow first, though, because I think that's something lovely. You get up in the morning, you just need that pop of energy, you open up the wardrobe, and then, wow, that's going to be, that's the first thing I'm going to do with a bit of yellow.
Definitely. Well, we'll keep us updated on your progress then. I definitely feel like we need to see your experimentation into yellow. And hopefully, listeners, we have left you with some food for thought on how you might use yellow on the next project in your homes.
But now, Steph, we've got to move on to the next section of the show. And this is one I always look forward to, for it's time to discuss all things colour and inspiration with one of the most sunny people you and I know, Zoe Murphy. Honestly, when I say the name Zoe Murphy, I can hear butterflies flapping.
Yes.
I can hear the birds tweeting. She is the most incredible character, isn't she?
I am a proper fan of Zoe's. So excuse me just a few moments while I fangirl all over her, because I really do think she is one of the most amazing pattern designers that I know. And definitely do go and check out her Insta page and website to confirm this. And we'll leave some links in the show notes for that. But she's just given me hours of joy through these uncertain times recently with her energy and enthusiasm for life on her Instagram channel. And she makes the most amazing YouTube videos as well. And it's seriously infectious.
She is brilliant. And I had the great pleasure of talking to Zoe a few days ago. And here's what she had to say. I am speaking today with probably my favourite person, my favourite creative for capturing happiness and joy in everything she does. It's Zoe Murphy. Zoe, welcome to the Let's Colour podcast. Oh, I'm so excited to have you on.
Oh, it's so lovely. Such a lovely intro. Oh. I feel very, very cherished.
I remember always making you laugh by saying Zoe Murphy and saying your whole name, and you thought that was really funny.
It's how I describe you when I'm talking to other people about you. I say, you really celebrate people. And when I think I walked in a room and you just said my name at me with your arms open wide, Zoe Murphy. It was like, I felt like I was at my debutante ball and being introduced. It was great. It was lovely. And I've never forgotten it.
Oh.
You really make people feel seen. Oh. So it's lovely.
Oh, well, ditto. I mean, we are doing this podcast about a colour that has at the moment a sort of bad rap. It's the colour yellow. And yet the colour yellow is associated with positivity, with optimism, with joy, with sunshine, with amazingly positive things. And yet we are quite scared of the colour yellow. And when we thought about the colour yellow, we thought, who is the perfect person to give the colour yellow a bit more, a bit more of a lift? Zoe Murphy.
Yeah, so, do some good marketing on yellow.
Marketing on yellow. So yes, the best person in the world to talk about yellow and positivity is you, Zoe. So Zoe, before we start, just tell us a little bit about you, because some people out there, we cannot believe this, but some people won't know about you and won't have Zoe in their lives. So just tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
Oh, brilliant. Yes, well, I'm happy to share all things Zoe Murphy, because of course I live and breathe them. But I am a furniture and textile designer based in Margate. And my main occupation is screen printing onto old pieces of furniture that people don't want anymore, and any kind of recycled textile, or indeed organic textiles that I think should be championed and people should pay attention to them. And I think that's really a good analogy for what I do. I use my designs and my printed work to draw people's attention to the things that I think I'd like them to use or see or understand or have in their homes. And I've been doing that for about 12 years, which doesn't feel like 12 years because I don't believe I'm old enough to have done anything for 12 years. But because I graduated from university studying printed textile design and was just so passionate about reuse and environmental behaviour and being sustainable that I started up straight away. I was screen printing onto things at university all about my seaside hometown of Margate. And I wanted to kind of revitalise the town and people's perceptions mm-hmm. of it by screen printing fantastic, nostalgic, happy images of my childhood and the town of Margate onto pieces of furniture. Such a weird, strange thing to be doing. I mean, who does that? Like screen prints their own memories of their childhood onto chests of drawers and then expects to make a career out of it. But it has, and straight out of university, I was picked up by a lot of people. I had a lot of attention for the work that I was doing. I think it happened at just the right time when recycling and upcycling was really starting to become a buzzword. And I'd never heard of these terms before. I was reading about them for my dissertation, but I was really making work that was very self-referential and all about the things that I deeply cared about. But as they say, in the specific lies the universal, and lots of people felt the same about the things that I felt. It did very well, and I started up my small business, screen printing onto pieces of furniture that either I had found or people owned and wanted revitalising. And it was always imagery to do with Margate or to do with optimism and things that could make people feel good and spread good energy. And I've been doing that ever since. And I've for a long time had pieces of furniture with Liberty in London. I've collaborated with some fantastic design companies. One of my favorites in particular being Dulux. Oh, I've worked with you guys on some just wonderful projects, all to do with the emotions around color and imagery and surfaces. And yeah, I spend a lot of my time reusing things and pretty much trying to get people to feel good and feel better about everything. And I'd say that's what I do the most. I do a lot of teaching on the side, and I run a couple of other small businesses as well. But my main thing is all of that screen printing happy things. Yeah.
There's something about the way that you capture happiness, positivity in colour. And it's a language you use that you infuse into the pieces that you do. And every time I see a Zoe Murphy piece, I know it's you. I can tell it's you. And the colour just sings. It sings like birds in the sky. It's just beautiful. Now, we're going to talk about the colour yellow. The colour yellow being a colour that I think you embody, and you're wearing some yellow earrings today, but I know you said earlier that actually it's pink you would associate yourself with, but actually there's something about yellow that's really important to you. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, because pink is something I naturally end up using as the main colour. And I liked, when I got thinking about yellow and my use of it, I recognised how I use it in my work and my life, which made it really appropriate for me to sort of try and get others to see it in the same way, because pink is the main colour I use a lot. I wear a lot of pink. I'm in purple and yellow today, but it's a kind of confident colour. It's bright. It's historically feminine, but being sort of reclaimed by feminism and almost being, introduced to masculinity as well. And it's just such a lovely colour. I use it a lot. My whole studio is actually a Dulux pink. I've painted the entire thing, I think, rose trellis four.
Oh, we love that colour.
It's like all over the walls. Yeah, absolutely. But with all of these, with all of these kind of colours, you have your lead, and then you need the complementary colours. You need the colours that are going to kind of accessorise those main features. And I recognised in kind of investigating my own relationship with yellow, yellow is the one that I use for that. And it is actually the thing that I pull in accessories, in details. It's kind of the fringe of my life, which is really lovely. And that's what I realised when I got thinking about how I use it. I describe all of my colours as warm. And in my mind, that is because I imagine them being soaked in sunlight. Right back to the very first palettes that I was creating when I was studying and trying to create my Margate palette. It was all about the optimism of being back in my seaside holiday, in my seaside childhood. And although there would have been rainy days and there would have been times when, it was overcast or there were bad things going on, that I wanted to evoke the happy memories of it. And so in my mind, it was all sunshine. It was all of the blues were a turquoise blue because they were kind of bathed in yellow. All of the pinks were going to be peachy pinks. And that's carried on. My colour use even today is just entirely, everything has that touch of yellow in the pigment. I mix a little bit of yellow with nearly everything and it warms everything up. It brings everything into a kind of sunshine soaked nostalgic sepia palette, and that's really appropriate for me. So although there is a lot of pink, it's all got little drops of yellow in all of it.
I love this. When I think of colors, I can smell them and I can taste them. I love the way that you describe it as sunshine, as you put it into your work as that little drop of sunshine. So how does it make you feel?
It really boosts my mood in the way that I think it's psychologically supposed to. It is a natural reaction for me. I've always thought, you know, about yellow as being something that was like a little pop of colour. It's a little burst and it's a little ray of light that you can introduce, but you don't want to be glaring straight into the sun, but you do kind of want to have a little sort of beam of it. And then I felt really pleased when I was researching and looking up about a little bit more about yellow and understanding, as I always like to do, kind of, I know how I feel. I'm much like you. I pride myself in hopefully being quite an intuitive person about these things. And I think about them a lot and I explore them emotionally. But I thought, well, let's see if there's any science backing what I feel and think. And I was looking a little into the history of yellow and the science behind the colour. And actually, you're right. It not only historically has it got a really complicated timeline. It started off as something that was considered to be, in the Roman times, it was like quite an effeminate colour. And then it became something that was used for cowardice, for marginalising people, as colouring symbols. Yellow was not a really positive thing to do. But then it became quite a raucous colour in the time of Oscar Wilde. And anything that was a bit racy and naughty got coloured yellow. And it's almost it's wonderful. Yeah. And it's kind of really re-identified itself again and owned itself again. And so now it's come back round to this really positive, outspoken shade, which, of course, when we see it, we feel that.
You're so confident with colour. How would you help people? Have you got any hints and tips on how they can introduce it into their homes, into their lives?
Well, I think even everything that we've talked about gives a really good indication of the potency of the colour and then how you could potentially use it. So it's going to really intimidate people, much like it would if you had like a huge, great big yellow sign on the motorway or a huge, great big, like you described, a bumblebee or something coming towards you. It's a colour that sort of, it's not necessarily triggering, but it certainly apparently stimulates our brain activity. And it's an intense colour and it stimulates mental activity. So it's good to have it probably, and this is definitely how I use it, in places where you want to kind of be perked up and feel awake. So definitely anywhere that's like anywhere around your morning routine, I use the colour yellow, I've noticed, in any outfits where I kind of want to feel like I'm going to have a good day, a joyous day, but also I'm going to be really alert and engaged. And anything to do with work as well, I tend to have like a lot of yellow notebooks, yellow pens, anywhere that I want my mental activity to be stimulated with the intensity of the colour, I think is a really good thing. And so I think probably not using it in a whole great big wall, not having it as a really dominant colour in your colour palette or in your environment, in your interiors, in your clothing, perhaps a whole yellow outfit, although I do know a fantastic man in Margate who wears entirely yellow. He's really amazing. But again, he draws a lot of attention and maybe you don't want that much attention. So it might be in your interior, in your outfit choices, you're going to have those little pops of yellow on the inside of doorways, just on the trim, or, you know, just beading that's on lampshades, or the pen that you're going to use on your desk, or anything that's going to kind of spark you a little bit, but isn't going to necessarily overpower you or intimidate you. I think it's a really, really great use of the colour. That's how I use it.
Absolutely fantastic. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for your insight, your wisdom and your joyfulness. Thank you, Zoe.
Absolutely. No problem, Marion. I have loved it and thank you for having me on. This is a joy.
Oh, I am even more of a fan now, which I didn't think was possible. She is a total ray of sunshine during these colder autumn months.
Yeah.
I know, she's so talented too, and she's beautiful. Oh, thanks, Zoe. It was an absolute pleasure. I really do get the best job interviewing, don't I?
Well, hold your horses there, Marianne, because before you settle on that being the best part of your job, you are about to slip on your white jacket and lend your ear to the nation, as we now have to move on to one of my favourite parts of the podcast. We ask our very own Doctor of Decorating, Marianne, to prescribe the antidote for your DIY ailments. So, Marianne, are you ready for today's decorating dilemmas?
I am so ready, Steph.
So our first question is from Megha, and she has sent in a voice note. So today she has a question for you about colour scheming. So over to Megha.
Hi Dr. Deluxe, hope you're well. I want to know, how do I choose a combination of colours to create a scheme for my room? Thank you.
I love this question, Steph. This is great. We get asked this all the time. So there are three main types of colour scheme: tonal, harmonious, and contrasting. And this is a sort of theory, and this is how it works. So if you want to do a tonal decorating scheme, that's basically choosing a tone of colour, so one colour, and using different tones of the same colour across different elements of the room. And that means you could have a dark blue sofa, and you might take that colour and do a lighter shade of that colour on the walls, and maybe an even darker shade of that in the cushions and the artwork. It's just using different tones of the same colour to decorate different elements of the room. That's the most simple, classic form of decorating, and it always works. The next type of colour scheming is called harmonious. And harmonious colours are colours that lie next to each other in the spectrum. This is like, if you imagine a rainbow, these are the colours that lie next to each other. So if your kind of central piece in the room was blue, on one side of the blue, you've got kind of tealy blues and greens. And on the other side of blue, you've got kind of like warmer blues, richer berry colours. And that combination of colours, so the sort of berry blues, the warm blues, through to the tealy blues with that true blue in the middle, are what we call harmonious colours. And you take that palette of colours and you start to decorate different room areas of the room with those harmonious shades. And because they all snuggle up together, in the rainbow and in the spectrum and on the colour wheel, they all work beautifully together across different elements in your room. It's a kind of the connecting thing. It's like a little family of colours that are related, and they're not the same, but they are related, and so they look beautiful and layered. And then the third form of decorating, or the third classic colour scheme, is what we call contrasting colour. And these are colours that are so opposite each other. They lie opposite on the colour wheels. So these are combinations like, if you've got a blue sofa, orange, which lies opposite, or if you've got something red in the room or pink, the opposite colour is green, and if you've got something purple in the room, the opposite colour is yellow. These are the colours that lie opposite. Now, this is very conceptual. There are links in the show notes to help you understand what tonal, harmonious and contrasting are, but using colours that are least like each other, it's like a match made in heaven. It's kind of like the perfect date of colours. And so that combination in a room looks amazing. There is a simpler way of putting together colour combinations as well, isn't there, Steph?
Absolutely, because not everyone is going to have the confidence to maybe do this yourself. But one of the benefits of, you know, doing what we do is that we are able to help people with this dilemma exactly. Mm-hmm. So if you do have the Dulux Visualizer app, which I highly recommend that you do get, because it's a great app to have for your decorating, there is actually a functionality on there which a lot of people don't know about. Once you've gone in and you've chosen your colour, or you've matched your colour from an item, then there is a combinations button that you can press, which then gives you a tonal option. It gives you a kind of coordinating neutral option. And then it also gives you a slightly braver option as well, which is much more like the contrasting type of colour scheme that you were just describing, Marianne. So that is a really great way of making sure that you've got a kind of foolproof colour combination and scheme. So I definitely recommend that people check that out too. And hopefully that has really helped you, Megha, and let us know how you get on. We'd love to see some pictures of what you achieve. So are you ready for another?
I am far away.
Excellent. So again, this is a really fantastic question. And this time it comes from a lady called Alice, and she's from Brighton. And she has a query about how to paint her radiators.
Hi, Dr. Dulux. I've got some radiators in my house and I really like to paint them. So I wondered if you could let me know what type of paint I need to use and if there's any tips and tricks that I need to know. Thanks.
Well, yes, radiators, they can be an eyesore, can't they? They can, you know, they can kind of dominate the room and they don't have to be white. That's the lovely thing. So they're quite easy to paint, and I would suggest that you paint them the same colour as your walls, but you need to do this. So the first thing you need to do is make sure they're nice and clean. So clean them down, use a little bit of sugar soap and rinse that off with water. And then I would use a quick drying multi-purpose water-based primer undercoat. So Dulux do this fantastic quick drying primer and undercoat for multi surfaces. So put that on with a brush or a roller, let that dry, and then apply one or two coats of quick drying satin, quick drying eggshell, or quick drying gloss in your favorite color, depending on the finish that you want. So a satin will be, satin and eggshell I think work particularly well if you've got matte on the walls.
Much more modern.
And top tip, these are all quick drying, so they'll be touch dry in a matter of hours, but I wouldn't turn that radiator on for at least a week afterwards. And I know this is getting towards a cold time of year, but I would maybe do one radiator at a time in a room, but don't turn it on for a week. And what will happen if you turn it on too quickly and it gets too hot is the colour can crack, or the paint can crack. So it needs to cure properly, and that would be the best way of preserving the paint itself, getting it to stick to the radiator, letting it cure for a week. I know we're all impatient, but it definitely
it's really important to do that step, isn't it? And you touched upon this, Marianne. I think it's an important one to raise as well, is that you don't always have to paint your radiators white. And I think a lot of people feel quite nervous about straying away from, you know, the standard white radiators that we're all used to seeing, especially if you, you know, in a new build or you buy a shop bought kind of radiator that you install.
Yeah.
But there are many ways that you can treat radiators. So one of the trends, I guess, that we're seeing quite a lot at the moment is painting your radiator in the same colour as your walls, because then I guess you're blending it in with the rest of your scheme rather than having this sometimes quite ugly thing on the wall that's in this bright, stark white that then draws your attention. And that's, of course, not usually the feature in a room that we want people to see first. So by disguising it in the same colour as your walls, you're doing exactly that. You're disguising it and making sure that the attention is elsewhere and not on your radiator. So I think that's a great top tip.
Yeah, you can do double quick time if you use one of those little radiator rolls. It's going to get down the back of the radiator with a long radiator roller, and you can really get into all of those little kind of like little indents in the front with just a normal little small handled roller.
Yeah, another great tip actually. Yeah, get the right tools, because they really do make your job a hell of a lot easier than having this huge big fat roller getting you all over the place. Yeah, definitely don't do that. Brilliant. Well, fantastic. Thank you so much, Dr. Dulux. And sadly, we're almost finished with this episode, and almost for the series. And that has just gone so quickly, hasn't it?
I know, it's so sad.
But indulge me for a few more moments, listeners, because as this is the last episode in the show, we wanted just to take a few moments to extend a massive thank you for all of your support, all of your support for our little podcast over the past few months.
We've had such great support and feedback from all of you, and we're so sorry to have to go, and hopefully we will be back soon. And thanks for listening to us, but thanks for subscribing to us as well and allowing us to chat with you every fortnight. It's been amazing seeing those figures flood in, and we feel very privileged, don't we, to be part of your lives.
Yeah, we really do. And I'm so glad that all of you have got in touch to give us that feedback and also leave us some lovely reviews. So one that summed up completely our intention behind why me and Marianne get out of bed every day and want to make this podcast. This is brilliant, and it comes from SBlonde90, who said, "This is brilliant. So refreshing to hear real people just chatting about interiors without making it feel unattainable and snooty. Great advice, hints, tips, and I'm feeling so much more informed and inspired to just give DIY a go. How great is that?
We love you, Esplon 90.
We really do. Thank you so much.
We also had a note from a listener who wrote in to say thank you for covering the migraine story that we did in last week's episode, which reads, I was just listening to episode 5 of the Dulux podcast and wanted to say I think it's great that Dulux are working on a colour palette for migrainers. It was so nice to hear you guys and such a big brand taking on an interest in migraine. I suffer from chronic migraine and it's a pretty life-changing disease, so any awareness that's brought to the condition is great because it's so hard to get across that it's so much more than just a headache.
That's really fantastic.
Thank you for that feedback. It's really fantastic.
Really great. And it's so good to know that we've been a real help in so many different ways.
Oh, enough of that. Before we start crying, Steph, and getting all emotional, are we ready for a bit of feel-good colour?
Absolutely.
Zoe, I'm going to ask you one more thing. If you have a story about yellow that you would like to share with us and make us all feel happy, fire away.
A couple of years ago now, maybe 3 years ago, I had the opportunity to go and watch at the cinema a stop frame animation, or I think that's what it's called, movie called Loving Vincent, which is a film that is entirely about Vincent van Gogh and his the end of his life. And the entire thing is painted by hand, oil painted in his style. And there are so many, the colour yellow is really quite significant in the film because of course it was such a strong colour of his palette. And most of the work he made in the last few years of his life, and such a sad life really, and ended in such a sad way. But so it should be a melancholy moment for me, but the film was so special and so, I can't even think of words to describe it, just flabbergasting. Like the entire thing was hand painted and these oil paintings in his style are moving in front of you and they telling the story of the end of his life. And they even incorporate, the characters are the characters that he painted. So they managed to even get in some of his famous paintings into the film. And this yellow, I've watched a documentary about the making of the film afterwards, and they said the yellow was the hardest to paint because they would, the fine artists that they used to capture all of these frames, they would photograph everyone and then they would overpaint it and move it a little. And they said the yellow was the hardest one to, if you had painted a black outline around your yellow and then tried to shift it around, it was a nightmare. But I had the privilege of then going on a trip to Amsterdam. I've been a few times to visit my friend who lived there. And I went to the Van Gogh Museum and saw some of his yellow paintings in real life. And having seen them move on screen and then being able to stand in front of those colours, in particular those yellows and those blues, was just so moving. It's probably one of the very rare times I've nearly cried in front of an oil painting because it just felt like I was there. And it was that, again, I think it's a tribute to how the context of how you experience colours can leave such a mark on you in the way that you then see them again. And it was really special for me. And I love that film and I love those trips that I took and I love those paintings. And so they bring me a lot of joy. When I only need to see a postcard of something that Van Gogh has painted that is yellow, and I just fill with all of that nostalgia. It's really lovely.
We will put all of this information in the show notes and links to Zoe, and you can find out more about this wonderful person.
What a great note to end on. But the bad news is, sadly, that does mean we're at the end of the show and the end of the series.
But fear not. We hope that this is just the beginning and we'll be back soon with series 2. We've already got some fabulous ideas that we want to share with you. So please do hit that subscribe button with your preferred podcast platform.
It has been really fabulous having you guys along for the ride. So do join us again for more.
Let's colour!
If you have a decor dilemma for Dr. Dulux or feel you need to confess a questionable colour choice to get it off your chest, then get in touch, as we'd love to help. Pop us an email or send us a voice note to askdrdulux@axonobel.com. That's AKZONOBEL.com. Oh, last thing, we would really appreciate it if you could take a short minute to just rate and review the show.